This is The Book in the Spade, a report on the latest discoveries and developments in biblical archaeology. Here's your host, Gordon Govier.
Every week for the past 40 years, the Book in the Spade radio program has been reporting on biblical archaeology. We celebrated that milestone on February 15th, 2023, with our first live broadcast, which was actually a Zoom webinar. Our special guest for this special occasion was Scott Stripling, Provost of the Bible Seminary in Katy, Texas, the newly elected president of the Near East Archaeological Society, and director of excavations at Tel Shiloh for Associates for Biblical Research. He told us that this year will be their fifth excavation season at Tel Shiloh, the site in central Israel where the tabernacle was erected with the Ark of the Covenant inside for over 300 years, according to the Bible.
We are in a sweet spot that we're going to keep working for several more seasons. A monumental building from the period of the tabernacle that orients east-west and appears to match very closely the dimensions given in the Bible, as far as we understand what a cubit is anyway, for what the tabernacle would have been. And we have a lot of evidence of a sacrificial system. And so last summer, we began to excavate the favisa, the sacred bone deposit. Out of that bone deposit, many thousands of bones, which we're in the process now of studying, but I know that they're all kosher and they're disproportionately from the right side. And mixed in with that, we have a votive offering, two gold stars. People don't just lose gold in the ancient world, as I said earlier. When you find something like that, this is an offering of some kind. It's something of great value. The pottery that is in the deposit, it's late Bronze Age pottery. So it's dating back to the time of Joshua. So we'll continue to work the favisa, work the monumental building. And we have a gate now that we've uncovered on the north side of the site, right next to our excavation area. And of course, the Bible talks about the Gate of Shiloh. El Amarna 288, Clyde Billington and I have been geeking out over EA 288, which we believe actually discusses Shiloh, and it mentions the Gate of Shiloh. So we'll focus on the gate, on the building, and on the favisa.
Amarna tablet 288, these are tablets that were written from Canaanite cities to the Pharaoh of Egypt. This sounds like an interesting perspective. Was it known that this tablet referred to Shiloh?
No, the three big scholars on this were Albright and Rainey and, but anyway, there are three big scholars on this all identified this as a fort down in Egypt called Churum. If that's the case, it's the only one of the El Amarna letters that is from a site in Egypt. All of the sites are Canaan or further north into Syria and Lebanon. Silu is what it's called. Clyde and I had independently come to this understanding and we started comparing notes. We're super excited about this and we want to publish it.
So we'll probably come back to that story. Shiloh has an interesting connection for me also. I worked as a volunteer, as I said, in 1978 at Tel Afek. Tel Afek was the place where the Israelites lost the Ark that had been brought to the battle site as they were fighting the Philistines from Shiloh. Then after the Ark was lost and the Israelites were defeated, 1 Samuel chapter 4 talks about a man from the tribe of Benjamin who runs from Afek to Shiloh, maybe the first recorded marathon in history, certainly hundreds of years before the first Greek marathon.
It's true. I measured it myself. It's 26 miles. And that's an amazing connection, by the way, Tel Afek. To be able to make that kind of connection is just so awesome. You know, we have now uncovered the destruction, the Philistine destruction layer at Shiloh, which is something we didn't know existed. The Bible only implies a Philistine destruction of Shiloh, Psalm 78, 1 Samuel 3, but it doesn't explicitly state it. But now we have a destruction layer from that period. And this is what archaeology does. It illuminates, gives context.
I want to go back to that monumental building you were talking about. I think you said it was about the size of the tabernacle, if you were right in your cubit measurements. Are you saying that this building was erected to replace the tabernacle?
That's what I'm saying. You have the biblical text itself in 1 Samuel 3, where the language moves from temporary to permanent. At first, you're reading about the curtains of the tabernacle, then the walls of the tabernacle and the door of the tabernacle. And then we have the Seder Olam and the Zevayim, two Mishnaic sources, second century, that say that there was a building or a platform of the tabernacle built at Shiloh, but that it had no roof, the tent was over it. So we have the biblical suggestion, and then we have the two Mishnaic sources, and archaeology comes along, and in this case, it appears that the Mishnaic writers were correct.
That's fascinating. I was wondering, the tabernacle supposedly, if it hadn't been replaced, existed for hundreds of years. That's a long time for a structure made out of fabric.
So many things happen that we don't know. You know, the Bible's giving us the highlights, and there's a lot of gaps in there, and we don't really know why they decided to do that, or did God give them permission, or did they do it on their own? But anyway, that's what apparently happened.
One of the other things about Tel Shiloh is you have an incredible team working with you. I think in years past, we've said that a number of volunteers at Shiloh makes it the biggest excavation in Israel. Is that still the case?
Even this year, we are eclipsing the numbers we've had in the past. So we have record signups, and we're even for the first time considering cutting it off for a certain week. If somebody's wanting to get in, they better go to digshiloh.org and do it in a hurry. I'm fighting off everybody who's trying to get us to shut it down. We've got a large team, and that enables us to do a lot of things. The wet sifting slows us down some, but when you have a big team, you can do some things like that.
About how many people we're talking about?
We are going to be north of 150 and maybe north of 175. And that's not counting day groups, you know, that come out and help from time to time too. So our system, though, is set up kind of like Moses and Jethro set up this hierarchy. So it's really set up where we can accommodate well because we have teams working within a hierarchical structure. So we can handle a lot of things.
If you're just tuning in, we're sharing an excerpt from our 40-year anniversary live broadcast on Zoom. We were joined by Scott Stripling, who's been on the program several times, but this time, since we were live, our audience got to ask questions of a real live archaeologist. We have another question from one of our attendees on the webinar, wanting to know your view on the authenticity of the James ossuary that I just mentioned in passing earlier, and the fact that it's controversial and it's hard to know who's right about this. It's an authentic ossuary, and everyone's understanding. The question is about the inscription, James, the brother of Jesus.
Yeah, James, son of Joseph, brother of Jesus. 7-word Aramaic inscription. Originally, most people thought it could be authentic. Then there was a wave of controversy, and it was thought that it was not, or at least that the latter letters may have been added on. But then the weight of opinion has swung back, and I would say at least half of scholars do hold that as an authentic artifact. I know people who have personally, under microscope, examined the letters, because I think the key question is the patina. The Oded Golan claimed that he cleaned the inscription, and that's why there wasn't patina, this greenish incrustation that forms over hundreds of years. But in the crevices of those letters, there is patina. And I know scientists who examined, and that's what they personally told me. So I don't know how you get patina in those crevices if it wasn't authentic. So it's my view that it is probably authentic.
But with the political situation, I don't think it'll ever be exhibited in Israel without some kind of a change going on.
That's a dicey thing. I know it's so hard because you get values. And let's face it, if it is authentic, then along with the Shroud of Turin, also in dispute, but those would be the two most valuable or sacred Christian relics that there would be. It's a shame, and hopefully one day we will have a solution.
Another question about wet sifting. He says, how do you bring water to Mount Ebal?
Remember the saying, if you can't take Muhammad to the mountain, take the mountain to Muhammad? We had to actually relocate the dump pile. So we did not excavate on Mount Ebal. It was just the discarded material from Adam Zipta's excavation. We relocated that to a nearby site that did have water because there was no context to it. So we didn't have to worry about stratigraphy, sort of similar to the Temple Mount sifting project.
We have another question. How do we subscribe to what includes the Bible and Spade quarterly magazine?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I should have mentioned that. BibleArchaeology.org. BibleArchaeology.org. That's ABR's website. And if someone's just doing basic research, that's a great place to start. You know, we've got great scholarly articles on there by conservatives, and they're well-referenced.
So recently, there's been another controversy, which isn't strange for archaeology. If you have two archaeologists together, there'll be three opinions. Your thoughts on the recent Hezekiah inscription?
Yeah, and sometimes I simultaneously hold two of those opinions.
This was discovered in 2007, and then just recently, a scholar has said this actually mentions Hezekiah. He's talking about some of the work that he's done. It's the first time, if it's authentic, that a biblical figure has taken credit for something that he's done, like people in the surrounding culture did, but it's not common in Israel.
Eli Shukron, who along with Ronnie Reich for 25 years excavated the city of David, had uncovered this, saw scratching on it, didn't make much of it. And recently, Gershon Galil announced that he thought he had deciphered this inscription. That's all we know at this point. I've seen pictures of it. I can't make anything from the pictures, but you know, sometimes epigraphers, the trained eye can see a lot of things that we can't. So I think we've just got to wait until we can see more.
Sometimes it's all in the lighting and the way it's photographed too. That can be critical.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's important that we have multiple scholars, multiple epigraphists that are involved too. That's what we did with the Mani Bal tablet. We made sure that we had several epigraphers who were seeing the same thing. But time will tell on that one. If it is, then I think it's very exciting.
Another question about Mount Ebal. Do you hope to work on more material from Mount Ebal? Are you finished there?
Well, we wet sifted about 30% of the discard piles. I would love to do more. As you might imagine, there's complications when you're dealing in areas that the Oslo Accords are defining and so forth. We've seen bad things happen recently. We've seen damage to the site at Ebal. There are published articles in Arabic news of plans to build on top of the site. And then I also see published reports in Hebrew coming out that there are plans to redraw the lines and possibly make that site accessible. So we would love to. We're just going to have to let the politics play out a little bit.
Another question. Do you believe you have found the Holy of Holies chamber at Shiloh?
This question's not giving me any place to hide, is it? I haven't wanted to make this kind of an announcement yet. We're wanting to do another season before we say that we know if my hypothesis is correct. And it's really, it just started out as a hypothesis. I had one wall that was east-west, and then I got a perpendicular wall, and then another cross wall, and then we could get dimensions. So over four seasons, the strength of the hypothesis grew. But if indeed it turns out that I'm correct, then yes, we do have the building divided on ratios of 2:1. Which is what the tabernacle was and which is what Solomon's temple was. So the answer would be yes, then we would actually be digging in the Holy of Holies.
Hard questions for our archaeologist in residence during our live broadcast marking the 40-year anniversary of this Book and a Spade radio program. Our thanks to Scott Stripling for joining us and his willingness to answer questions from our live audience. Scott is provost of the Bible Seminary in Katy, Texas, as well as the newly elected president of the Near East Archaeological Society and director of excavations at Tel Shiloh for the Associates for Biblical Research. About 25 years ago, we launched our website, radioscribe.com. That's where you can find more resources about biblical archaeology, including information on how to subscribe to Artifacts, our biblical archaeology news magazine, and biblical archaeology videos from a variety of sources, including the Israel Antiquities Authority. That's radioscribe.com. I'm Gordon Govier. Join us again next time for more Backgrounders on the Bible through Biblical Archaeology on The Book and the Spade.
The Book and the Spade is produced by Scribe Media. For information on biblical archaeology resources or obtaining a copy of this program on CD, go to our website at radioscribe.com.